Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. F up the black police. That 13th Amendment. Trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, up coin tail pro.
Show.
They got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, you think this shit gon' be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fuck me promise.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, up coin sale pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, cause that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack upped up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and...
Today, the World Health Organization officially announced that this is a global pandemic.
In the next several days to a week or so, we're going to continue to see things go up. We cannot be discouraged by that because the mitigation is actually working.
The unvaccinated overcrowd our hospitals. I'm moving forward with vaccination requirements wherever I can.
Hi there, I'm Jonathan Otto. Welcome to COVID Secrets. In this episode, we'll be discussing the real dangers of the COVID vaccines. We'll be hearing from expert doctors such as Dr. Brian Artis, Dr. Christian Northrup, Dr. Judy Mikovits, and more about how they've experienced firsthand the detrimental effects of the COVID shot. They also share details about how the deaths and injuries caused directly by these vaccines is being covered up by Big Pharma, the government, and the media, and how the real data is being manipulated to continue making people believe that it's both safe and effective, all to follow through with their hidden agenda. Our experts are passionate about sharing the truth and saving lives from that serious harm that COVID vaccines cause. We'll start with Dr. Brian Artis, chiropractor, acupuncturist, and medical researcher, who has treated over 18,000 patients from around the world. He's also the host of a popular podcast, The Dr. Artis Show, a platform that he used to inform the world about the hidden agenda behind COVID and the vaccines. During this episode, Dr. Artis discusses the anticipated dangers and side effects that were discussed by the FDA 2 months before the COVID vaccines were launched. Some of these included miscarriages, neurological effects, 5 different blood clot disorders, and much more. He also goes into detail about how the vaccine-related deaths are being seriously underreported and then discusses the exact mechanism of how the vaccine is designed to cause serious damage to our bodies. Following Dr. Artis is Dr. Ryan Cole. Dr. Cole goes into detail about how he and his colleagues are seeing weird cancers after the rollout of these COVID vaccines. He also talks about the importance of boosting natural immunity and how the vaccine is altering natural immune responses.
All right, in October of 2020, the FDA held a meeting to discuss when the vaccines come out in 2 months, what are going to be our biggest concerns and what are we going to look for in the ways of safety and effectiveness for these shots. I mean, we have federal health agencies like the FDA and the CDC who's responsible for evaluating drugs, therapies, research studies, medical devices, and look to see are these safe and effective and should we allow these to be pushed into the public. Well, this is the meeting where the FDA in October, you'll see the date, October 22nd, 2020, where the heads of the FDA convened. And there was set up this review of how they were going to handle vaccine injuries being reported to the government when the shots come out in December of the same year. So this is 2 months before the shots ever came out. The shots came out December 14th, 2020. This was done 2 months earlier. And these were the concerns that the FDA had. They said, we're expecting on slide 16 of their 25-slide presentation, they made a list of what they expected to see being reported into the government as side effects to the shot. And this is the list that they all had. They said in October, we expect these things to be reported, and we're going to actually be evaluating a certain database to see how many times are these things reported, and do we need to be concerned? Do we need to stop the vaccine campaign of the COVID-19 shots? And as you see on here, there's actually a total of 5 blood clot disorders on this list. You'll see death on there. You'll see miscarriages, or as they define it, pregnancy and birth outcomes. You'll see neurological diseases from the shots that they know are going to, that they expect to be reported to the government. Guillain-Barré syndrome, transverse myelitis. These are paralyzing side effects of the shots. Then you also see to the right other acute demyelinating diseases. That's multiple sclerosis, for example. These are neurological trauma from the shots. You'll see Bell's palsy. Actually, it was on the original list. You don't see it on here now. Narcolepsy, which is neurological. It impacts your ability to stay awake. You'll just fall asleep. You'll see multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children, only in children. This is a new disease as of 2020. The spike proteins from the shots are known to cause inflammation of multiple organs in the body of a child all at once. Brain, spleen, kidneys, heart, bowels, stomach, kidneys. All of them at once will become so severely inflamed that the Mayo Clinic says the complications of this condition that the shots cause, one of the severe complications is death. So I do not see how this at all is beneficial. However, you'll see here they made a bullet point at the bottom left called autoimmune diseases. That's a blanket category. Right now in America, there's 80 diagnosable autoimmune diseases, all of which can actually be contributed to these shots. And they know it. They knew it, and now they know it for sure. In this same document, they said they were going to be evaluating the CMS data. You'll see it highlighted here. This is slide 15 on that presentation. They were going to be evaluating CMS data, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Now, what's interesting is in September of 2021, this was published that they were going to do a rapid cycle analysis of all vaccine injuries reported to the government every 7 to 10 days, starting in December when the shots started going out. I haven't seen, and no one has seen, any of these reports. CMS data is not voluntary compared to VAERS, which I actually like that they chose this. I'm just disappointed I haven't seen any of these reports yet. So we have worked with Dr. Thomas Renz and his whistleblowers in the CMS to get the information about how many people in CMS have reported these side effects that the FDA said they were going to be reviewing in the CMS data back in October of 2020. Do you know that in just 9 states alone in September of 2021, when we did the CMS data review, we actually looked at the last day of the shots, considered fully vaccinated for Medicare age patients, and 28 days later. And within just that data set alone, there's already reported 32,000 dead Medicare age patients within 4 weeks of the shots, which is double at the time what VAERS was reporting. Now, if that many people are dying in the Medicare age group immediately following the shots, why hasn't this been alerted to the media to make sure everybody knows these are not safe and are killing a whole bunch of people? It should be disgusting to you. it is to me. August 2021, the CDC compiled a list of myocarditis diagnosed teenagers and adults after the second Pfizer-BioNTech shot. And you'll see it here. This is the actual chart. The CDC logo is on there. And if you just look at the red data points and numbers, as you notice, as ages get younger, the actual episodes of myocarditis go up. Myocarditis means, myo means muscle, carda means heart, itis means inflammation of. Within 7 days of the second shot from Pfizer, these are the numbers of observed myocarditis, inflammation of heart muscle. This is dated August 18, 2021. The FDA voted on October 26, 2 months later, on whether or not to give these shots, Pfizer shots, these same shots, to children 5 to 11 years old. And they didn't find anything disturbing from this data. I do. Myocarditis, defined by Dr. Hinton out of the UK, says that for all age groups, anyone diagnosed with myocarditis, all of these teenagers on this chart were diagnosed within 7 days with myocarditis. Dr. Hinton in the UK says that myocarditis is fatal in 20% of all people with myocarditis, no matter what your age is, within 2 years. 20% of all these teenagers on this chart will be dead in 2 years. In 5 years, the fatality rate for myocarditis is 50%. That means for these 12-year-olds in this study, in this report, these 12-year-olds, 50% of them will be dead in 5 years because of the adverse side effect of myocarditis in these shots. Now, is myocarditis a side effect of these shots? Yes, it's actually listed on the Pfizer and Moderna's fact sheets that the FDA publishes right now. This is December of 2021. It's listed myocarditis, inflammation of heart muscle, is a side effect of the Pfizer and Moderna shot. Did the FDA know that myocarditis was going to be a side effect of the shots? In their October 22nd, 2020 report, it's listed second from the bottom. Myocarditis is an expected side effect of these shots. When are we going to pull the plug on this? No, the FDA decided on October 26th that even with this data, we're just going to have to start injecting all 5 to 11-year-old children and just see what happens. That's actually what they said. I am not okay with that. Now, what is the disease processes of even heart inflammation called myocarditis? What is it that the virus does and the spike protein on the virus and the vaccine? What do they do to cause disease? All diseases, 100% of them, are initiated by a process of damaging the cell in your body, in any tissue. And when you damage that cell, you damage it with what's called oxidative stress. And here's a study from October 2020 that defines that the virus SARS-CoV-2, that its disease process called pathogenesis is related to oxidative stress. Well, we know that. What about the spike protein? Sure enough, the spike protein, per this report, actually showed us that the spike protein, this is in May to June of 2021, the spike protein also causes oxidative stress, which means you damage the cell and allow the flood of electrons into it to allow the disease process to start. I just told you, the FDA said Guillain-Barré syndrome is going to be a side effect of the COVID-19 shots. It's already been reported.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Currently. This is a great, great onslaught of children's physical health. It could be permanent or life-threatening.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Thank you so much for joining me in this episode. I'm so glad that you're here and that you're able to get this information. This is what people needed and continue to need as we go into the future, because we're not getting the truth from the authorities and the people that we would have expected to have gotten the truth from. And so it's super discouraging and disappointing for all of us that have come to this realization of the fact that we've been lied to and deceived, and this is costing us and has cost us in the past and continues to cause so much suffering in people's lives, millions of people's lives, billions of people's lives around the world. And so my encouragement to you is to be a part of the solution and to ensure that you have this information at your fingertips, to make sure you watch this series as we're airing it and to enjoy each and every episode. Get this information into your mind, into your heart, share this with your friends and family. And one of the great ways to be able to continue to use and be able to take the benefit of this information is to be able to own the series. By owning the series, you're able to support our mission to keep us to continue and to create more of these documentaries and to continue investigating new subjects that are important to you. And also, it allows us to be able to serve you in the best possible way. And so we have some programs here available, the silver and the gold packages, and they have really great discounts of up to 71% off and hundreds of dollars worth of free gifts, just close to $1,000 worth of free gifts in the gold package, for example. And when you take advantage of this, you'll be able to use all the additional content, all the extended interviews, the 50 plus experts that are sharing their amazing wisdom, and in these extended length interviews that you can watch the entire thing. If you enjoyed what you saw, you'll enjoy that additional content. And as well, you get the additional reports and guides and specific bonus free gifts that we're giving as part of the program to help you and support you in your journey. To own your copy of COVID Secrets, all you have to do is click the buttons or the banner below this video to get started and to choose the program that's right for you. You can do that just below and take advantage of these special discounts and the free gifts that we're only offering during this screening, and they'll be closing at the close of this series. So thank you so much for watching this, and make sure to grab your program while you can remember, and to use this and share this with your friends and family. Thank you so much.
Dr. Cole, with what's going on right now, what were some of your biggest discoveries when it came to what's actually happening with COVID vaccine injuries? And potentially the actual agenda of what's happening here and the onslaught, what were your discoveries? Because you're looking under the microscope, right, in regard to this. You're looking at
Correct.
People that have been vaccinated and their blood. You're looking at this. Is that right?
Yeah, and so it's interesting. Early, right after they rolled out, I noticed this kind of little benign warty-type lesion called molluscum. And I noticed all of a sudden I was seeing it in 60, 70, and 80-year-olds. I only ever see that in kids, and then you get immunity that's little virus. And I thought, something's wrong with the immune system here. And then I started going into the mechanisms of why would that simple little viral rash be popping up after a vaccine, and I realized, oh, these are the same cell lines that keep cancer in check. Then I started seeing a bump up in certain types of cancer in the lab, and I thought, oh boy. So I dove into that research and dove into the mechanisms there, and I started spreading the word. You know, everybody says, well, your evidence is anecdotal. Sure, but we're, scientists are observers. I observed the pattern. I said to my colleagues, look, you need to start looking too. And now colleague after colleague after colleague, gosh, we're seeing weird cancers after the shots. We're seeing an uptick of this kind of cancer and that kind of cancer.
How could it happen so quickly considering that tumors develop for so long?
Yeah, that's the thing. If tumors develop as fast as they're allowed to, and you have the defenders in your immune system that keep them in check and keep them from growing and are fighting and killing them off, but if you suppress those immune cells that normally are battling them all day long, now you're in trouble. And so that's one of the challenges, is we're seeing certain ones take off like wildfire that didn't used to. And so this is a grave concern. I want to be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But I know in certain populations and certain people, unfortunately, it's starting to happen. You know, is the immune system going to be suppressed permanently? I don't know. I hope not. But at least we need to be honest enough to say we need to do more studies, and we need to follow people very closely, especially if you've gotten two shots or three shots. It's a concern.
People need to be working to get off that merry-go-round, firstly, and then work on protocols to reverse the damage and clear up the diet. And
100%. I mean, that's the other thing, too, is public health has been a joke. You know, and I'm a public health official now.
Yeah.
I decided during all of this, you know, to run for a vacating position as the director of our Central District Health Board over four counties and almost a million people. And I went through the politics, and so I got onto that board. But, yeah, get your sleep. Make sure your vitamin D levels are normal. I mean, that's the conductor of our immune system. And if it's normal, you have a fine conductor with a symphony. And if it's abnormal, you have a mosh pit at a punk rock concert. So, I mean, simple messages like get your sleep. Your immune system works better when you're rested. Don't eat processed food crap that, you know, the world is bombarded with. Mental health, connection, wellness is so important for our mental stability, is to get together. And what did this whole pandemic do? Pulled us apart. Lockdown? Are you kidding? The best thing you can do is be outside, not just for your sunshine in the spring and summer for vitamin D, But the near-infrared light is good for the mood. It's good to put you into normal patterns. All these simple health messages have been ignored. And they say, you know, lock down, wear a mask, and get a shot. That's not health. That's not public health. And should have never been public policy. Mm. It's been illogical from the get-go, which tells me that, you know, there were forces that had other interests than our health and wellness at heart.
Dr. Artis and Dr. Cole have shared invaluable insights into the dangers of the COVID vaccine. Next, we'll share clips from the COVID Second Opinion Senate hearing where we gain insight from various highly esteemed experts on the ineffectiveness and the dangers of these vaccines. We'll hear from Dr. Robert Malone first, an internationally recognized scientist and the original inventor of the mRNA vaccination, DNA vaccination, and multiple non-viral DNA and RNA mRNA technologies. He also holds numerous patents in the field of gene delivery, delivery formulations, and vaccines. He explains how these vaccines may actually be driving the virus through basic evolution, where it may become more pathogenic and better able to evade people's immune responses, as well as potentially exploit it. Dr. Malone is followed by Dr. David Wiseman, Dr. Richard Urso, and Dr. Peter McCullough as they discuss the deadly mechanisms of these vaccines and the serious side effects that they have, and how mRNA vaccines or RNA can actually bind to your DNA and regulate it, making it highly unethical.
I've just come from Europe from the opportunity to spend time, work with, and learn with Dr. Gert Bondenbascha, who has been the leading proponent worldwide of the position which I gently suggest the senator and his colleagues really it merits paying attention to. One of the things about Omicron that's rather odd is that the data are showing that the vaccinated seem to be more prone to becoming infected by Omicron, and there's some indications in the data. I'm going to voice this as my opinion based on the data that I've looked at, primary data from a number of countries. So it's my opinion. There's evidence that Omicron is associated with a higher risk of infection in the vaccinated population, and that increased risk is a function of the number of vaccine doses that one has received. Omicron, we are truly blessed, as I said back before Christmas, that Omicron has such low risk for severe disease and death. However, it's got a warning sign. And it's what Gert has been warning about and what the FDA has acknowledged in the original documents allowing the emergency use authorization, in which they told the pharmaceutical industry that they desired that the pharmaceutical industry would investigate the risks of antibody-dependent enhancement or vaccine-enhanced disease. What Gert has been warning us about, quite stridently, is if we continue to implement this universal vaccination policy rather than the position of the Great Barrington Declaration, which I've supported in multiple op-eds in the Washington Times, among others, if we continue to pursue this universal vaccination strategy in the face of the pandemic, particularly with Omicron now, a much more highly infectious, highly replication-competent virus, what we risk is the driving the virus through basic evolution to a state where it may be more pathogenic and more able to elude immune response. So in sum, I don't wish to scare, we've had enough fear porn, but if we continue to pursue universal vaccination, the high probability is that what we will continue to see is the evolution of additional escape mutants that are increasingly infectious and may well become more pathogenic. This policy of forced universal vaccination is absolutely contrary to all of our understanding about basic viral evolution. We are clearly seeing the development of escape mutants that are resistant to the vaccine. Omicron is not only resistant to the vaccine, but its infectivity seems to be facilitated by the vaccine. And in my opinion, this must stop for the sake of the world. Over.
One of the key points is that we still don't officially know what the structure of these so-called vaccines are. I mean, we do have some information now that's been published by a Nobel laureate group from Stanford, looking at the sequence from discards and comparing it with the patterns. And there are what are called untranslated regions. Has anyone ever heard of this word, untranslated region? Anyone?
Yes.
A few people. Okay. Everyone has been told that the RNA in there is just RNA that's making this spike protein that's going to make your nice little cute little vaccine, just like those mumps and polio vaccines that we've all had as children. No, wrong. There are untranslated regions. And I'm going to read you what they are. There are three human gene sequences in those untranslated regions. One of them, we think, I'm working with a group of molecular biologists and genomics, one of them, we think, is targeting the mitochondria. I'll tell you what that gene sequence is. It is the 3' untranslated region comprises two sequence elements derived from the amino terminal enhanced of split AS mRNA and the mitochondrial encoded 12S ribosomal RNA to confirm RNA stability and high total protein expression. That's what the WHO document says. Now, if that's true, that could mean, we don't know, we need to find out, that could mean that the expression of the spike protein is actually being expressed partly, at least, in mitochondrial ribosomal.
This is so wrong.
Mitochondrial ribosomal.
No, no, no. Yeah.
That means it could be a kamikaze expression.
Dr. Weissman, listen. You're certainly letting us know you're qualified, but I don't know what you're talking about.
What I'm talking about, Senator, is in every single drug package insert, you see a chemical structure. Do you not? There is a chemical structure. We need to know the exact chemical structure, the exact sequence of the RNAs and the DNAs in these vaccines.
Right.
Okay, they are being withheld from us. FDA needs to show us what those structures are. It needs to explain what the pseudouridine is doing. They need to explain this paper from Sahin, who is the founder of BioNTech in 2014. They talk about non-natural nucleosides. What are those non-natural nucleosides doing? He talks about the toxicity of them, the pseudouridine. None of that is being discussed.
So,
none of that.
So I want to clarify a little bit.
I agree with you.
Okay.
We need a lot more information.
I want to clarify because people have said these are mRNA vaccines. mRNA only always goes to protein, and we can't do anything. First, we know that people have reverse transcriptase. Yes, it can make DNA. Yes, it can go back into the DNA. But there's something else about RNA. RNA can make little hairpin loops. RNA can regulate your DNA. So when you put an mRNA vaccine or RNA into your body, it can get in, and it can be alternately spliced, can bind to your DNA, and it can regulate it. For positive or for negative, it can change your gene expression, and there's stuff in there that can do that either intentionally or unintentionally, and we don't know. It's completely unethical because we are just beginning to understand RNA silencing, where these RNA molecules regulate our DNA. So that makes it completely unethical to use this technology.
We have to get on to, there are great unknowns with respect to the vaccines, their mechanism of action, and disease categories like cancer, but there is a disease category upon which the FDA, the CDC, and all stakeholders agree that the vaccines cause, and that's myocarditis or heart inflammation. Now, I will tell you, as a cardiologist, it is crystal clear that these vaccines cause myocarditis. Dr. Parks has already quoted the paper by Avolio that has shown beyond a shadow of a doubt, the vaccines cause myocarditis. The FDA indicates for Pfizer and Moderna that they cause myocarditis. We now have over 200 papers in the peer-reviewed literature on myocarditis, sadly showing the rates of myocarditis are far in excess of what the CDC ever imagined. We've identified that boys have a predilection for this far more than girls. The maximum age group, the peak age group is age 18 to 24, so it's actually the college age. The risk extends up to age 50. And I can tell you that in this age group, it is clear the risks of the vaccines are far greater than the risks of COVID-19, the respiratory illness. Two papers, one by Tracy Hogue at UC Davis, one by Ron Kostoff, that these papers have been presented at the FDA meetings. They have not been challenged as analyses. And there are now fatal cases of myocarditis published by Washington University in St. Louis, by Verma, and by Choi from South Korea. More fatal cases accrue. There is the father of a boy here in this room who's died of myocarditis. One death, too many. One. We have 21,000 cases of myocarditis and climbing in the United States that the CDC has verified. One was too many. Under no circumstances, under any circumstances, should a young person ever receive one of these vaccines, let alone ever be pressured to receive a vaccine, let alone ever be mandated to take a vaccine. This is crystal clear. The FDA agrees. There can be no controversy over this. There can be no normalizing of this to say that it's mild or it's transitory.
Well, talk about that, because that's what I say. It's mild. Is myocarditis mild?
I'm telling you, as a specialist, myocarditis is not mild. There are papers by Schauer and by Truong at University of Utah at Salt Lake. When they do MRI on these individuals with suspected myocarditis, 100% are having heart damage. 100%. We have a paper by Tishopi and colleagues looking at the outcome of individuals prior to COVID in this age group with myocarditis. 13% will have permanent heart injury. 32% never actually get up to normal. They don't get back to normal. We are seeing unprecedented numbers of athletes dying on the field in Europe. Unprecedented. Of these cardiac arrests, half of them don't come back. We now have a report out of the heart group in the UK where actuarial mortality for those under age 15, mortality in the UK is higher than expected.
There's no denying that the COVID vaccines have been one of the biggest monstrosities of our time. Not only are they ineffective, but they're also showing to actually increase the risk of future infection and are causing severe and life-threatening symptoms. Next, we'll hear from Dr. Jane Ruby, Washington, D.C. health economist and New Right political pundit, host of radio and online TV show Dr. Jane's DC, who holds PhDs in education, psychology, and masters in nursing and international health economics from the University of Rochester. She shares her experience on the harmful ingredients that the COVID shots contain. Having worked for 20 years in the pharmaceutical industry, she has firsthand experience of how corrupt Big Pharma is and how they have zero regard for our well-being, all for their financial gain. She also explains how the contrived mRNA molecule in these vaccines is encased in a lipid nanoparticle so that it can get into every cell and integrate with your own DNA. This forces the body to make billions of these toxic, again synthetic, never before seen in nature spike proteins based on this blueprint from big pharma companies. We'll then hear from Dr. Andrew Wakefield, an academic gastroenterologist and surgeon with a special interest in inflammatory diseases. He's also the director and writer of a powerful documentary called Vaxxed, From Cover-Up to Catastrophe, an investigation into the CDC's destruction of a study linking autism to the MMR vaccine. Dr. Wakefield goes into detail about how dangerous RNA technology in these vaccines is making our own cell factories for foreign proteins that are toxic to our bodies. He also goes into detail about how these COVID vaccines, which are imperfect, are putting strain on the virus to further evolve, leading to more resistant variants. Dr. Jane Ruby, it's a privilege to interview with you today. I've been following your work throughout the pandemic and specifically in the last several months, and it's been very helpful for me, and I've found you very insightful in your research, and I'm really looking forward to what you have to share today, what's new, what's current, what's happening now.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Oh, you're very welcome, and yeah, thanks for taking the time.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Awesome. And I'm very fascinated about your take on ingredients in the vaccine. I'm very fascinated with how you're understanding the vaccine is doing these things to people, because I feel like that's one of the challenges that we have, where we see all these things happen, but then we wonder, well, how is it that this was devised in such a way that it would be so damaging? And we've heard a lot about the mRNA spike protein and how it's working, but then there's these other ingredients and the fact that there's blank labels. And there's changing of ingredients, and then yet it seems as though some people get maybe a saline solution. But there's so much to talk about here. But before we go into all of that, would you mind sharing some of your credentials for the camera? Because I know our audience likes to hear about that.
Sure.
I'm trained as a medical professional. I'm a licensed nurse practitioner. I took all of my coursework in the medical school of the University of Rochester, and I am licensed to practice medicine in a limited specialty. I subspecialized in cardiology, and that was the beginning of my clinical career, where I took care of patients directly and independently in ICUs, in acute care, other acute care settings in the hospital. But then I went into research. I started to run a research lab that is one of the external types of research labs that pharmaceutical companies use to develop their data that will eventually be part of what we call the package that goes to the FDA for evaluation of approval, of something for approval. And in the course of that, I actually was recruited into the pharmaceutical industry in 2001. So I have spent the last 20 years of my life inside. I know how the sausage is made, and that includes interfacing with the FDA, all kinds of other regulatory agencies, human subjects review boards. I've written hundreds of original protocols. I've written hundreds of informed consent. These are, a real informed consent is about 25 pages, and it's got to be approved by a human subjects review board. To do what I've done all these years, I want the audiences to know that you have to have a very high level working knowledge of pharmacodynamics, pharmacokinetics. Like pharmacokinetics is, what happens to the drug when it gets into the body? How does it get in? How is it stored? How is it excreted? What's the half-life? Things like that, that we need as basic information before we can move a drug forward into studying it in human beings. And then that's basically my credentials. But before we get started, I want to ask you and the audience to please try to commit to not calling it a vaccine. And I'll tell you why. These are not vaccines. A vaccine confers immunity. It confers future protection. These shots, and I know we're going to get into more of why, they do not do anything like that. And the reason it's important is because if I said to you, Jonathan, you know, or Marianne, please don't take your child for a vaccine tomorrow, right? You would think I was crazy. But I could get a better conversation going if I say to the person, please don't take your child to get what we believe to be a bioweapon. Mm-hmm. That might say, whoa, that might get them to step back and think about it. So
I like that, and I appreciate that. Yeah. And I always love that, because sometimes I feel forced to speak within human perception.
Don't.
Yeah.
Be the change.
No, I like that. Yeah. And so, but a challenging point that I put back, just because, you know, this is great.
I'm open to it.
I think that vaccines don't do what they're supposed to do, and that's the reason why we don't have the vaccinated versus unvaccinated studies that are commonly done, and they are in the medical literature, and Dr. Brian Hooker is pulling up all that information in
agree. 100% agree. But don't use the language of the criminals.
Yes, so I'm saying that vaccines aren't vaccines.
I would agree 100%. So none of them should be called vaccines.
No, exactly. We should call them all bioweapons.
Yeah, well, we should definitely call them whatever they are, but they're not. They're not beneficial.
Yeah.
They actually cause more harm. They're a money maker. This is what's behind everything. Yeah. They're a repeated. If I get you on a vaccine course, what you think is a vaccine, if I get you on a course of these injections, I've got you for the rest of your life.
Exactly. Getting the Hep B shot on the day you're born, which murdered children to create it.
It's hard to even think about. It's hard to think about.
Yeah, hundreds of children that were mentally ill were tested on with the Hep B shot, and they kept dialing back the dose because children kept dying, and it was experimented on humans. And so it's all unethical,
sure.
These measures. So anyway, I really appreciate you being here. So
sure.
Let's talk about, okay, so this bioweapon, this gene therapy, what is in the shot?
If you had asked me 3 months ago, 2 months ago, I would have said, you can look at my past, you know, interviews and videos, I would have said it's a computer-generated chimeric, that means taken from many different cell lines or sources. mRNA, which by the way doesn't stand for messenger RNA, which is a natural substance that we make, it's called modified RNA because it's synthetic, and we have no idea what that code is going to tell us. But we would have said 2 or 3 months ago, this contrived mRNA molecule encased in a lipid nanoparticle so that it can get into every cell, lipid nano, and that it's designed to get into your cells. You've heard this story before. Force your own, integrate with your own DNA, force you to make billions of these toxic, again, synthetic, never before seen in nature, spike proteins based on this blueprint from these companies. Why? Because these companies, Moderna, they lay it out, the reset of life. They show you, they brag about how they have this, these companies say, well, my technology is mRNA.
So what's some of your big takeaways now with what's happening, what's going on for the future? Now let's talk about children with the COVID-19 shot. What and the upcoming boosters and the variants and all the reasons why people believe that these are things that people should do. What's your message for everyone on this subject?
I think that every policy decision made by the CDC and Tony Fauci in respect of COVID has been disastrously wrong. Mm-hmm. Disastrously wrong. The everything from the treatment, from withholding drugs which were known to be safe and effective, from pushing a vaccine and vaccine-only agenda, for pushing what are these quasi-vaccines, which is extraordinarily dangerous, RNA technology, making your own cells factories for foreign proteins, viral proteins that are known to be toxic, poisonous, pathogenic proteins, is utterly bizarre. Utterly bizarre. And can only lead to catastrophe, and I'm afraid that's where we're headed with this vaccine. It's tragic. It's difficult. I've run out of superlatives. You know, you think there are enough superlatives to kind of deal with the mistakes that they've made and continue to make every day, and I don't have any more. It is just disastrous, and a lot of people are going to succumb because of this policy. One of the problems is this, that if you put genetic selection pressure on a virus, a coronavirus, by giving a vaccine which is imperfect, and we saw this with antibiotics and bacteria, okay? You start off with a medical miracle. We've created antibiotics and we will defeat the enemy, the bacteria. No, we won't. Why? Because you give an antibiotic that is only 95% effective. 5% of the bacteria are resistant to the antibiotic. And when you kill off the 95%, that 5% becomes the dominant species. They're the survivors. They are the resistant strains. And the more you do it, the harder you push that bacteria to mutate, the quicker it'll do it, and the more dangerous are the strains that emerge. We've witnessed this, okay? So in less than 100 years, antibiotics, this medical miracle, have become a nightmare. It's called the post-antibiotic apocalypse by the public health authorities. That's how it's described. We're now seeing exactly the same thing with viral vaccines. We're seeing the emergence of multi-resistant strains, in this case, resistant to the immunity induced by the vaccine. Now, when you have a coronavirus vaccine, which is imperfect, it puts a genetic selection pressure on the virus to mutate. That's what we've done. So you have this vaccine, which is imperfect. You have new strains of the virus emerging in the face of that. And so we're now, you know, we've gone from Delta to so on, Omicron and the rest, and it'll keep doing it. The more we vaccinate, the more it's going to do it, the more it puts a genetic selection pressure on the virus, and it will go on mutating. Pfizer, the boss, they all know this, and say, oh, we'll have to make new vaccines against the new variants. They're creating a job for themselves. Every time they do this, they'll put another genetic selection pressure on the virus to produce the next strain, the next strain, the next strain, if they'd left it well alone with this virus. As with all respiratory pathogens, what we would have seen is the emergence, the peaking, the decline, and the disappearance of the infection.
And this is what happened with polio, this is what happened.
But they didn't allow that to happen, because they put this vaccine in place. So now what we see is these spike after spike after spike of new variant disease appearing precisely because of what we've done with vaccination. And so it's predictable. It's the evolutionary biology of viruses. That's how it operates, particularly when man interferes and tries to change that dynamic. And in this case, does so knowingly, consciously, with the certainty that they're going to create new strains against which governments are going to panic and demand new elements, new vaccines to deal with those new strains. That's what we're seeing now. So you will never defeat nature. You won't. Nature will always win. Life will always win. Life will find a way. And that's what we're witnessing now. Now, fortunately, the way in which viruses evolve with mankind is they become more transmissible and less dangerous. Why? Because there is a biological advantage to the virus to doing that. A good parasite does not kill its host. So what's the point in all your hosts dying out? Because you've then got no source, no reservoir for the infection. So you don't kill your host. So the successful strains of this virus don't kill their host, they're milder, and they're more easily transmitted. That's a successful parasite.
That's a true vaccine.
Yeah, and that's it's what nature is doing. So we're now seeing the emergence of Omicron, which is more transmissible and less serious. So that's the way man tends to evolve in the face of viral infection. And what we're seeing is nature prevailing, fortunately. And I think that Omicron will actually see an end to this pandemic because we'll have mass natural immunity, natural herd immunity. Everybody's been exposed and there's no longer a reservoir for the virus to go to. So it will naturally dissipate and die out. In the meantime, sadly, a lot of people will be hurt because they've been vaccinated.
Thank you, Dr. Wakefield. I really appreciate it. Next up is Del Bigtree. Del is a TV and film producer and CEO of the Informed Consent Action Network. He laments how Tony Fauci, along with other authorities, proclaim that they should be above reproach when the true scientific method welcomes different perspectives. Del discusses the effects of the vaccines, particularly how they turn the human body into essentially a manufacturing plant of the virus, leading to adverse effects, including myocarditis, blood clotting issues, and more. Following Del is Dr. Judy Markovits. Having over 20 years of experience working in the pharmaceutical industry, she also explains how they're growing vaccines in animal cells and human cells, and that they're injecting people with the bacteria. She also discusses how not a single safety study has been done on the vaccines on the schedule. She refers to vaccines as vials of poison and urges parents to protect their children from being poisoned by them. Del, it's a privilege to be with you. I've very much appreciated seeing the evolution of what you've been doing, and I think it's what's interesting is that I got to connect with you years ago. I think it might have been 5 years ago.
I think it's about right. Yeah, very early on. I was just starting to meet some of these thought leaders around sort of that health freedom space, and I think we met around the truth about cancer or something like
that. Yeah, exactly. And then the truth about vaccines, and that was a fire hydrant for me. I'd just gotten married, we came out to the US, and then I was just, you know, downloading information like a supercomputer, trying to understand what was going on. And you were super vocal and stepping out and getting data out to people back then, and now you were in the right position to then speak on the COVID vaccine, because you were already alerted to the issues with junk science with other childhood vaccines and all the kinds of propaganda around that. So you were ready for this, and I appreciate that and respect that about what you've been doing. So again, thank you so much for taking the time to do this with me.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. And so, well, let's dive in. I mean, off camera, we were just chatting, and I was just saying, like, what's the big thing? We got some of that on camera, so you can, you know, see where you'd go outside of that. But, you know, what are the big issues right now?
We've really lost our way. I mean, we're living now in a time where anybody questioning, as Tony Fauci said himself, if you question me, you're questioning the science. And that's just like the arrogance of that statement shows you what a dangerous position we are now in. Whereas what we should know is that all science depends on the challenge, and that is what the scientific method is. I was doing an interview with, I think it was someone out of the BBC or in the UK, and they were saying, you know, my problem, Del, is that, you know, maybe it's not misinformation, but, you know, you've taken this position that the vaccines are bad from the very beginning, you know, instead of, like, you know, showing that maybe they're good. And I said, oh, yeah, you know what? You're right about that. So it's a very, you know, astute perspective of where I'm coming from. But there's a definition for that as well. You know what that's called? And she's like, what? I said, it's called the scientific method. You see, our job in science and really as journalists is to challenge if it doesn't work. There's plenty of people singing the praises of this vaccine. Every single news agency out there virtually that is owned by pharma. So all the major news agencies, NBC, CBS, you know, even Fox and MSNBC, if you just look at the advertising that's taking place between, you know, the news, you know, that you're watching, if you see pharma ads, that means they're the boss of your news anchor. They're not allowed to say the things that they need to be saying or to ask the questions that they should be asking. I know that because I worked for CBS. I worked on probably one of the biggest medical talk shows and medical shows in the world, which is the Doctor's Television Show. I won an Emmy Award, you know, promoting science, promoting medicine. I've loved that job, but I know how it works. And I know when you decide to tell a story that, or want to tell a story that doesn't coincide with, you know, where the pharmaceutical industry wants the show to be, they let you know. And you have to change, you know, your tune or get back in line, or you're not going to be working there. And so coming from that perspective, I think that, if I was to just sort of boil it down very simply into what my investigation, which has been going on for, as you said, now 5 years, I mean, I'm one of the few journalists that has really, like, been totally focused and dedicated to vaccines. You know, I look at pesticides. I've done some work on Monsanto and glyphosate. But, you know, people that know me and watch The High Wire, they recognize, you know, a good 90% of the things that we are focused on investigating is vaccines, safety and efficacy. Those two words. It's safe. It's effective. Is it? I have specialists all around the world. I have scientists around the world, legal teams that are all reading all the documentation of the safety and efficacy of vaccines. And so that's the work we were doing. It wasn't lost on me when this pandemic started that this was something I'd been predicting. I'd been saying to audiences all around the world, really. I mean, I've been in Mexico. I've been in Israel. And what I would say to them is, the pharmaceutical industry is the most powerful lobby in Washington. And as far as I can tell, it appears to be the most powerful lobby in virtually every nation in the world. I can only speak about the United States of America. And in the United States of America, pharma is outspending oil and gas 2-1. I'm being attacked by every news agency. They're trying to say that we're baby killers. They're censoring me. I've been kicked off of YouTube and Facebook and all of this. But, you know, around that, you know, the one thing that we felt like we had was we had the truth, and we were going to be able to prove the truth on this. And it was just a matter of time. And certainly, you know, I could never get people to understand that none of the vaccines you're giving your kids were ever gone through a proper safety study. They've never been tested against an inert placebo in a placebo-based study like every other drug you take. And then again, be like, Dell spreading misinformation. Well, now finally, because they decided to force this vaccine on the world and rush it out, the whole world just watched how we make a vaccine. It's actually not any different than all the other vaccines. When, you know, people say, oh, it's really, you know, was too short. I don't trust. Even doctors, nurses, I think the CDC just said like 30% of the frontline medical staff of hospitals across this country are not vaccinated. And they're all saying, well, I just didn't like how the safety trials went. They were too fast. It was emergency use authorization. It got out. They were only in there for like 2 months studying it. What about the long-term multi-year effects like cancer or autoimmune disease? Really astute questions that are now being asked across this nation. Well, they should have been asked before, because the truth is there's not a single childhood vaccine that was ever tested longer than 6 months. And that's what we had been saying. So now the world is watching it. But to my point, for those of us that were in here sort of fighting this battle to get to the truth, we realized we were up against a Goliath. The pharmaceutical industry, as we know, is that big. It's the number one funder of the U.S. government. And then you bring in, you know, sort of this cabal with the technocrats or the technology side of the Silicon Valley. And now you've got vaccine passports, you've got tracking systems, you've got microchips, you know, all the different phases of the reality of, you know, our future. I'm not saying we're being injected with microchips yet, but I can guarantee you, and we all know, they're working on that technology. And so with all of that money, the trillionaires in big tech and the billionaires in the pharma world, well, how are we going to win? Like, how do you win against something that big? They own, as I said, all the news agencies. What are you going to do? You've got to scare them. You've got to piss them off enough, really, that the Goliath swings wildly, just gets annoyed enough that they swing and miss. And really, that's what I feel like has happened. In so many ways, people were saying, you know, it's like we're all frogs in a pot, right? We've heard this before, and they just slowly raised the water, and by the time it's boiling, none of the frogs jumped out. It happened too slow, and so we all get killed that way. If that's the case, and so many people are talking about it like that, somebody's got to turn that flame up hot, fast, and that's what COVID's done. COVID has waking up the world because now we feel that heat, we feel that pressure. Australia, Austria, Germany, you know, losing our rights, being, you know, quarantine centers, and you know, people checking vaccine passports happening now. It's on the doorsteps of New York and California. It's inside America. So all of these things, I think, are brilliant in that it's making us wake up. The question will be, will we wake up in time? Are there enough of us still capable of waking up to make a difference? And so to finally just get close up the question is, I think the issue, in all the research I've done and talking to all the scientists that I have from around the world, I think we're about to see the greatest, largest human die-off in the history of our species caused by the vaccine.
How many people do you think will die?
You know, it's really difficult to answer how many people will die from this vaccine, but I've, you know, I've talked to experts, and they'll always say, look, it's, I mean, we don't have any space to understand what that would be. But I've heard, you know, very easily from people thinking, well, it could be easily 1/5 of the population or more.
Yeah, which would match, some people see that matching with what Bill Gates talked about with reducing the world's population by 15%.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't really dwell in, you know, whether or not this is on purpose, trying to kill people. I will admit, it gets harder and harder to sort of imagine that there isn't some nefarious desire to do that. But I'm one of those people that, like, I really believe in humanity. I think that most things happen because of arrogance and ego and human error. And I think that most people, most doctors, most scientists, you know, they're all doing what they think is right.
Yeah.
But there are, I think, some bad actors. I actually think, like, for instance, I think Tony Fauci is evil. And I just finished Robert Kennedy Jr.'s book, The Real Tony Fauci, or Real Anthony Fauci. And man, it's definitely worth reading. And you see that there's a pattern to this guy. I mean, and it's psychotic. Denying access to drugs that work only to promote drugs that will make billions of dollars. I mean, it happened during AIDS. He's doing it again. And I think that ultimately, if we've done our job as journalists, those of us that are awake, Tony Fauci should be put in prison for crimes against humanity.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So one thing I want to ask you, Del, is about, one, I wanted to say with the potential of how many people could die, I believe that that could be turned around if people knew how to, one, stop getting more shots,
mm-hmm.
Which is obviously, well, it's not hard to know how to do that. You just don't get the shots, but also to work on reversing vaccine injury, then protocols, which is, and for starters, just healthful living would be a part of that. And so that's the hopeful piece, but everything going as it is, the outcome, I think, could be exactly like what you're saying, or worse, or something to that effect. And let's pray to God that that is not the reality.
Correct. I mean, I pray that the scientists that I'm talking about, whether it's Geert van den Bosch from Belgium or Dr. Robert Malone, who invented the mRNA vaccines and is speaking out against, you know, really his own invention now, saying, stop it, we're using this wrong, people are going to die, you know, and or, you know, Dr. Michael Yeadon, an ex, you know, vice president at Pfizer, has been just, you know, yelling from the tops of mountaintops, stop it immediately, this is catastrophic. I hope they're all wrong. I mean, I pray that they are. But when we talk about the numbers, right here in America, I think they're just bragging in the news today, we've hit 200 million people that have been vaccinated with this vaccine. And I've done a lot of investigation into recovering from vaccine injury. It's a huge part of what, you know, sort of drew me into this space. My film Vaxxed was a lot about autism and vaccines, and I've, you know, documented how people are able to sort of, you know, recover their child from autism. But let's be clear, this vaccine is like nothing we have ever seen before. This is a brand new technology that has never even been injected into an animal. The first test animals to ever receive this vaccine technology is us, human beings. So when we look at that, we are seeing all sorts of anecdotal stories, right? We hear the stories of people that are around people who have been vaccinated, women who, you know, it messes with their menstrual cycles, women who were in menopause that get their menstrual cycle back, not from getting the vaccine, but from being in the room with people that were just vaccinated. What is this thing? What is it doing? To very quickly, in case no one in your documentary has sort of discussed that yet, let's just talk about the difference between this vaccine and every vaccine we know before it. Usually, when we vaccinate, we inject some form of a virus or a bacteria in your arm. Usually it's deadened or killed, attenuated is a word you hear a lot. So it's made so it's not as virulent and so it won't, you know, wreck your immune system. It's just there to present itself so that you create antibodies. Your immune system makes antibodies, fights it off, you know, in a very, this very mild form of it, and then remembers that. You have, you know, that required immunity and those antibodies that last throughout, you know, they're supposed to last forever. No vaccine's ever achieved that. The only immunity that lasts forever is naturally acquired immunity, but the vaccine's trying to mimic that, right? Well, this doesn't work that way. We're not injecting the virus or the bacteria into your arm. We're injecting an mRNA message. An mRNA message is essentially a message that's usually sent by your DNA. Your DNA realizes that you're not feeling good. You're not having, there's an invader perhaps in your body. So it sends a message to your cells and tells your cells, if you make this protein, it will attack that bacteria or that virus or whatever it is. It'll sort of send a message on how to govern the body and regulate it to handle the invader. Well, in this case, we've made a fake mRNA message that is being sent to our cells. And what it is a recipe for our cells to start manufacturing the virus. So we turn our cells into a virus manufacturing plant. We've never attempted this before. We didn't even attempt it in animals. And let me be clear, maybe this is the future of science as we know it. Somehow turning our cells into a virus manufacturing plant ends up being a great idea. But I'd like to see some time put in that, right? I'd like to see some animal trials for like 5 or 10 years. I would like to see a small group of people followed, not just for 5 or 10 years in this case, since you're messing with our immune system and our cellular structure, and in many ways, it's a gene therapy. You're messing with our genes. Our DNA could be involved. These are things that we should have studied this process for 2 generations. There may be things we don't see in a generation receiving this that will appear in offspring. We have given drugs, for instance, to, you know, mothers for morning sickness that ended up, you know, they were fine, but then their daughters couldn't give birth, that it had affected them the next generation. What if we make a catastrophic error like that with a vaccine like this that makes everyone sterile, not this generation, but the next generation trying to have babies? That's the end of your species. That's why you do long-term safety trials, especially with something that is this brand new. And so all of the evidence we're looking at is all the ways this spike protein, and so to be very specific, our cells aren't making, you know, aren't manufacturing the whole virus. They're just manufacturing the spike protein, which if you look at the Wuhan labs and you look at the work done in North Carolina and Peter Daszak and, you know, gain of function research, it's the spike protein that they were really messing with. So that is the bioweapon. The virus really is relatively benign except for this very dangerous spike protein. And so that is what they're making the vaccine. So now imagine you're not taking on maybe 10,000 tops, a million particles that you might get in breathing in, you know, this virus. When you're injected, they're bragging that you could have somewhere between 4 billion and 4 trillion of these spike proteins produced by your own cells, like as though that's somehow an advantage. I want as little of this bioweapon in my body as possible, and the vaccine is bragging that it's giving me 1,000 times as much as a natural infection would. This is just the beginning of the issues. And so when we start seeing blood clots, thrombocytopenia, let's look at that for a second. This is what we first saw in AstraZeneca. We saw it with the Johnson & Johnson, which are a viral vector vaccine, a little bit different than mRNA, but similar. It's a DNA vaccine using your cells in a similar way. But we saw that we were having these issues of, you know, people like getting really sick and some of them dying from, you know, this heart issue along with thrombocytopenia. So you have a platelet issue where, you know, thrombocytopenia where your platelets are disappearing, but you also have a blood clotting issue. So this was an anomaly. This is why we know it was the vaccine. Almost nowhere in history do we have a human body where you have a, you know, blocking of arteries due to, you know, collection of platelets, but also a problem where your platelets are disappearing. So how do we discover this? They would give heparin. Usually when you go in with blood clots, a doctor gives you heparin, which sort of breaks the blood clots and reduces your platelet count so that you can sort of stop the issue. Well, they were giving heparin, and now all of a sudden the people didn't. We recognize, wait, they don't have enough platelets, and now we're giving them less platelets, and they're going to bleed out. How are these two things happening at the same time? So that was something that we've really, I mean, very rarely, but almost never have we seen that until the vaccine, where I'm clotting and I have no platelets. That makes no sense. And so they had to put out a dictate. They had to admit it, because if the normal treatment for blood clots was used on these people, they're going to die. We have to figure out a different way around this. We got myocarditis and pericarditis in our children, which is swelling of the heart being caused by this spike protein that's being injected in the vaccine. And the numbers that we're seeing out of Israel, you're three times to six times more likely as a boy being injected with this vaccine to develop myocarditis, a swelling of your heart that will be a permanent lifelong disability in your heart. Hopefully it doesn't kill you, even though we're told at about 10 years out, 50% of people with myocarditis die. So we have these children, and we know they're 3 to 6 times more likely to develop myocarditis than to end up in the hospital had they just gotten a natural COVID infection. So right there, when we look at the risk-reward-benefit ratio, we can say unequivocally, and I've studied vaccines for some time now, I've never been able to tell you absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt, this vaccine is more dangerous to children between the ages of 0 and 18 than the virus is. I can tell you that. So now when the CDC and the FDA is approving it, I'm saying, why? When have we ever put our children in harm's way to protect the elderly? Those are the ones that are at risk, right? This is not a childhood illness. This is an elderly illness. This kills people that are usually over the age of 75, that have other comorbidities like cancer and COPD and diabetes and hypertension and heart disease. Those people that are already on their deathbeds, coronavirus, COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, you know, depending on how you want to talk about it, it's bad. It's bad for those people. They're at a high risk. Children, zero. I mean, it's really a zero.
I mean, I look at back to when we first interviewed now 5 years ago, and we were talking about some of the things, some of the concepts of what's happening now. We talked about mandatory vaccines for adults and things that didn't seem like they were going to happen to in the public eye, but the work has been there for a long time to try to get us on the uptake. And it appears to me that with the flu shot, they haven't been able to get the kind of compliance that they've really wanted. They've wanted us all to be on a flu shot every year, at least. I mean, that has been the big push. And it's interesting now that we have this flu Rona, where it's the concept. And it's interesting, you might find this interesting, when our computers have this issue that comes on it, it's called a virus. And who was the person that was behind these computers and behind the software updates to kill these computer viruses, Bill Gates. So we've been conditioned on even these types of things, just by the way we use our computer, we got a virus. Well, we need to have the antidote to that. Okay, well, it's kind of like the vaccine for the computer. Mm-hmm. And so they've been trying to get us compliant, but we weren't frightened enough to have such a high compliance for the flu shot. But I think that they're, for those that opt out of the COVID shot, but they still keep getting the flu shot, I fear for these people. And same with childhood vaccines. If they say, well, no, we're not going to give our child this experimental COVID-19 vaccine, but we're going to give them all the other childhood vaccines. I fear for these people because I believe that we're in the hands of this system.
Dell Bigtree, the Informed Consent Action Network, the lawyers, Aaron Seary, the Highwire.com, Children's Health Defense, you know, they proved, you know, 2 years ago at the end of 2019, not a single safety study has been done on anything on the schedule that's made every year. Every year is warp speed. People think the flu vaccine, oh, you're just putting this sequence, that, you know, influenza A, influenza B, little H1N1. Uh-uh. They're growing it in animal cells. They're growing it in human cells. So you're getting all the bacteria. You're getting all the things. They're literally injecting you with the disease. Warp speed every year. They never look at it. As long as it doesn't kill and is more people than the year before. And you can see that. Remember the 2017-18 flu season after Trump was elected and Tony Fauci promised him a little outbreak? It was influenza. It wasn't SARS-CoV-2, because we caught them in 2019, you know, of the people I just talked about, because we finally had the evidence. Remember at Event 201, and there was an international vaccinology meeting towards the end of the year in 2019, and the head of the WHO was, we don't know how these things are killing people. Remember 2017 and 18, when everybody had this horrible cough? Dry cough. It was weird. The vaccine, the flu shot does nothing. 10% efficient. Get it anyway. So they seeded it then. People got evidence of COVID long before people started playing with the COVID vaccine. So yes, parents need to know, not another shot until double-blind placebo-controlled studies, and they won't be done because they're not single agents. They're vials of poison, just as Dr. Zelenko said. So if you ever let another vial of poison be injected into your child, that's why I was here with Brendan Witt, you know, an NHL hockey player. These athletes, coaches, they know how to take care of their bodies. And they're more susceptible to myocarditis because they're stressing their system. These parents have to wake up and get these masks off their children.
We've gained deep insight into how vaccines are clearly part of a larger plan to cause damage to our bodies and turn them into a manufacturing plant for diseases and to cause our bodies to self-destruct. So far, not a single one of our experts has agreed that the COVID vaccines have any purpose other than to cause destruction. Next up, we'll go back to Dr. Ruby as she explains how Team Enigma, a team of analysts and biostatisticians, dug deep into the VAERS data, finding significant numbers of disability and death. Additionally, they found an L-shaped deployment pattern with the COVID shots and that the worst batches of the shots were deployed strategically. Following Dr. Ruby is Dr. Vladimir Zelenko. He talks about the fact that up to 50% of the population are at risk of dying after getting the shot and goes into detail about how these vaccines are causing severe damage to the body. He talks about how people who have taken the vaccine should start to follow a protocol immediately to protect themselves. He continues by going into detail about his protocol that saved thousands of lives.
Recent breaking news, Jonathan, from a group that has called itself Team Enigma. This is a group of analysts, biostatisticians, and God knows what else. There are professional hackers in there. There's a lot of people, and the majority of them are in the shadows. They took a look at the VAERS system in a very different way from Exposé UK did a couple months ago. They looked at lot numbers, and they did see numbers of death and disability. But what they did was they took it a step further, and they looked at the deployment, if you will, over time. They saw the strangest thing, Jonathan. They saw an L-shaped deployment. What I mean by that is the most toxic batches went out over a period of time. There were some gaps, like those vials, those lots didn't cause all that, and then there'd be another huge spike. And these people have said, this is an intentional experiment on human beings without any oversight, without any safety portion of the studies. This is intentional. And then when they took Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson, and they overlaid the deployment for the three companies just from last year, mid-November to mid-December, for example, they found the same pattern. So, Jonathan, these companies are colluding. They're working together, and they're sharing data because we now have seen that they are overlapping. They're using each other's lot numbers. Now, this is very important because Pfizer has one particular format. It's two letters, and then it could be a number, and then two letters and a number. So what they've done, this is very diabolical, they have encoded every lot number with a code that these people broke, the code, and they are identifying, they're deploying, knowingly deploying the most toxic batches. These analysts tell me that these companies are conducting what's called lethal dose studies. Now, we normally reserve those for animals. You need to know what the range is where you're going to kill a living thing. Those are called lethal dose studies. They're never done on human beings.
These companies, except for the Hep B shot that I just mentioned. But yeah, it's happening right now.
It's happening right now. And here's the other scary thought. All of these lot numbers that were identified, there were some that were more poisonous to children. Because remember, Pfizer color codes its files for children. But the bottom line to the big tragic part is that they're still in circulation. I wanted to get that out. I want to understand people, before you get depressed or upset, you're empowered. You have an ability to be aware. If your family member is going, say, let me go with you. Let's just at least look at the lot number before you take the shot, right? And so the bottom line answer to your question, what is in these shots? I don't know anymore. But I can tell you on a given day, it could be anything. Absolutely anything we've never even heard of before. Because these companies are running the tables all by themselves with no oversight.
And so it's very dangerous. You know, with Russian roulette, I said to someone earlier today, you know what you're getting. You're either getting nothing or you're getting a bullet, right?
Yeah, sure.
With this, it's like a 5D Russian roulette. You could be getting an mRNA poison, you could be getting cyanide, you could be getting FM-102, luciferase, you could be getting something we don't even know about yet. Because you can't analyze chemically every single vial, right? And by the way, for every lot number, one lot number could be up to 1.5 million doses. And they're still circulating out there for adults and children.
Wow. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And is this part of the reason why the labels are blank?
When you're talking about a label, you're talking about what's called the package insert. That's the piece of paper that's inside. That's a legal document for approved drugs. And every word letter in that piece of paper is negotiated between the company and the FDA under normal circumstances. My understanding is that when you have something under an emergency use authorization, because they can change the formulation at any time without permission. And remember, they didn't finish their studies. So the package insert contains the results of your pivotal trials. So they haven't finished their studies. That's why they're considered experimental under emergency use authorization. So I wasn't surprised personally as a pharma experienced person that those pieces of paper were blank because this is an experimental EUA drug. I would have been shocked if a drug gets approved and that was blank. That doesn't make sense. That never makes sense. So just to clarify that for people.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. It's a very good point you're making in regard to Russian roulette. Does this explain in some ways for you why some people are fine after the shot and other people have severe issues, including death or thrombocytopenia, the whole list that are in Bayer's? Is that anything to do with that, or is it that people's bodies respond differently? What do you think is happening?
It could be a combination of both, right? If you don't know, we're all feeling our way through the dark. All of the doctors, the experts, and the analysts on the front line, you know, the front line doctors groups, everyone who's front and center trying to educate people, we're feeling our way in the dark. Remember, these companies are committing a crime, and they're committing mass genocide. They're not going to tell us 100% what's in there, right? Like I said, six months ago, we were all out there on the trail going, yes, it's got this in it, it's got that in it.
Because
that's right, because that's what, it's a combination of some analysts actually found that when they looked. That doesn't mean that's in every vial. That doesn't mean...
It might be uncommon. We don't really know, right?
Correct. And there was a doctor, Dr. Zalewski, Frank Zalewski, in Poland, who came forth maybe about 3 or 4 months ago. He had gotten a batch. A batch was 5 vials, right, in a little container. And he examined all of them. 2 of them had parasites in them. 2 of them had what appeared to be clean, normal saline. And 1 of them had some graphene-looking material in it. So that's 1 batch from a lot number. So there you have, within the same lot, very different things. So, Jonathan, it could be thousands of different things. We just haven't identified them yet. This is a crime that if we don't shut it down now and stop getting tested, stop for people who are getting these shots, stop getting repeated shots, if we don't shut this down, this is going to go on for probably generations.
How many people could die?
Depends who you listen to. Up to, in my opinion, 50% of the vaccinated population.
Similar to the animal experiments?
There are 2 billion people, a little more than 2 billion people vaccinated, just a billion people. Now, if you listen to 2015, the Associate Path Gates said in a TED lecture that the world population needs to be reduced by 15% due to global warming. How? Through the use of vaccines.
Yeah.
So first question, why would I take a vaccine for my health from someone who is advocating and financing reduction of the world population?
Yeah. People try to find some other way he could have meant what he was saying, but I can't even get my head around what he could have meant.
Well,
and he even said reproductive services, meaning abortions, correct? Right. So he kind of gave the kit and caboodle there because people that don't defend innocent life and speak against innocent life often are not defending their own rights or the rights of others because you're ruining the rights of the child and your own rights when you get on with these campaigns. So he kind of gives it all in a package there.
No, these sociopaths are real racists. They want to kill the majority of Africa as useless eaters, you know, unsophisticated people. Whatever the rationale is, they want to wage war on those undesirables that they consider undesirable.
Yeah.
What they're doing is spitting in the face of God and denying the sanctity that every human being possesses. But anyway, so my point
is... And the world's not overpopulated either.
It's not. It's God's department anyway. How many people live on the planet, how long we live. What kind of... Would you feel comfortable saying to someone, I think a billion people need to go away? What kind of sociopath says that?
Yeah, and they never mean themselves. Right? Otherwise, they'd do a great favor to everyone by jumping off a bridge. It's like, well, then you lead the way.
You know, I think that the hunters should be afraid of being hunted.
Yeah.
But they think they're bulletproof. They think they can wage carnage, fear, terror on a global scale without payback. They think they're immortal.
Yeah. Yeah. And you were saying...
No, so the key is to prevent the antibody bomb from going off.
Yeah.
And the way you do that is by taking antiviral prophylaxis. The answer is not to create more bombs by taking boosters. The answer is take antiviral prophylaxis that will prevent you from getting another viral infection.
Would ivermectin be part of that?
Yeah, of course. And I think anyone who's been vaccinated is in such a high risk. So a 10-year-old child vaccinated, in my opinion, has the risk of death as a 95-year-old nursing home resident. So I would recommend high-risk prophylaxis with ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, zinc, vitamin C, and vitamin D at the bare minimum.
Yeah.
NAC.
And like frontline COVID critical care, the dosing that Dr. Pierre Corey puts there is good. Do you have dosing and anywhere online where people can learn?
I do, yeah. My website, I have different, slightly different protocol than Dr. Corey's protocol. He uses higher dose of zinc than, in my experience, has caused a lot of nausea. So I use a little lower dosing, but their protocol is very effective. And my website is Vladimir Zelenko MD.com. It's my name, Vladimir Zelenko MD.com. And there I have all the printed for free, printed protocols in many languages, both for prevention, prophylaxis, and treatment.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you. So, and is it outlined in the setting of vaccine recovery there with the protocol as well? Like, is it listed as such?
No, it's outlined in terms of risk.
Yeah.
So there's low, moderate, and high risk.
Sure.
So if someone's vaccinated, they're high risk. That's what they should follow.
Got it. And have you seen any cases of people reversing vaccine injury from COVID shot?
Well, the best way is not to take any more shots.
Oh, I get that, yeah.
I have, yeah. If people are aggressive, the problem is in the first 3 months, people don't realize it and they get blood clots and they get really sick. So we need to spread awareness of the need not to take these shots, but if, God forbid, you made a mistake, which is okay, everyone makes mistakes, that you should start immediately protecting yourself.
Yeah, got it. Thank you. People should start doing these things immediately. And what is the mechanism that's happening in the body? Like, you know, all these different things happening. Brain issues, inflammation, thrombocytopenia, myocarditis, strokes. One girl I interviewed, her mother-in-law had a stroke 3 minutes after her first Pfizer shot and then 8 strokes thereafter and was incapacitated in hospice after that. Her sister, 12 days after the first shot of Pfizer, died of a brain aneurysm and 80 or 90% of her brain was covered in blood. Why are these...
We know exactly why.
What's the mechanism?
We know exactly. The Salk Institute from San Diego 7 months ago published a paper.
Dr. Robert Malone was a part of Salk in the past.
He's now against the use of these vaccines. He's a friend of mine and he's telling people don't take them. The risks are too horrendous and the government is lying.
It's sad that they used his work for evil. That would be kind of hard to live with.
Well, I think he's doing his best to spread awareness.
Not his fault. Exactly. It's very admirable that he's done that. And
you know, I don't mind people making mistakes. I mind people not learning from them.
Yeah.
So if he feels that he developed something and now it's not appropriate, he has the courage to stand up and say, listen, I really don't think that this is the right course of action.
Yeah.
That's a decent moral man.
Yeah.
But not God. No one's perfect.
The mechanism, protein factory.
Yeah, I was saying that from the moment of injection, your body gets taken over and starts producing tens of trillions of spikes that then migrate to the endothelium. The endothelium is the inner lining of your blood vessels. And it lines this, what's normally smooth tissue, with thorns. Now think about it. You have blood cells, red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets, flowing through your vessels, usually laminar, smooth flow. And now they're bumping into spikes, into thorns. They get damaged. They leak their internal contents. That causes a immune reaction that leads to blood clots. That's the mechanism. So if that blood clot happens in a heart blood vessel, that leads to a heart attack. That vessel, if that happens in a brain vessel, that's a stroke. That's one thing. The other is that the technology in these vaccines, the delivery system is a lipid nanoparticle, which has been diabolically designed to cross the blood-brain barrier. And that's why so many people are experiencing such horrific neurological side effects, because it actually goes straight into the nervous system and then wreaks havoc on your brain, on your spinal cord, on your peripheral nerves. It's an absolute disaster. It's a weapon of mass murder.
During this episode, our experts have shed light on the dangers of the COVID vaccines, or rather, bioweapons that are being pushed onto the population. They went into detail about the real ingredients inside these vaccines and why they're so deadly. They also explained how the vaccines have always been part of a much bigger plan, one that has had disastrous effects on humankind. We learned about the real numbers of deaths and injuries behind these vaccines and how they're causing a range of severe symptoms, especially blood clotting and myocarditis, even in children. These experts are advocates who aim to share the truth about the dangers of these vaccines in order to save hundreds of thousands or millions of lives. Hi, it's Jonathan. Thank you so much for watching this episode. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to learn truth and information that could help you and help your loved ones in profound ways and even save lives. And that's why I'm doing this, and this is why I believe so much in this work. And I know that people such as yourself need to be equipped with tools to be able to continue to share these resources and knowledge with others that don't know this, your friends, your family, those that are starting to have their eyes opened. So many people that we would have said they'll never come around on this. You're starting to see people like this come around and be willing and open. And with the censorship on the internet, this program allows you to rise above the censorship because we're off YouTube, we're off the major platforms, Facebook, that get deleted. We have your own private membership area. We have your books and your DVDs that we send out to your home. You'll have this on your coffee table. And so it's censorship free. No one can ever take this from you. And that's the power and the information, the knowledge that we're going to be sharing and that we've shared is priceless. It helps people to know how to navigate tough situations and to know the specific protocols that you can do, among many other things, to help lift you up as well and to give you the frame of mind that causes you to be successful and break through and move ahead with your life versus to be frozen and in paralysis due to this propaganda that's being rammed down all of our throats. So thank you for joining me, and thank you for your consideration. All you have to do is click the buttons or the banner below, and you can take advantage of that today while you have the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Today, the World Health Organization officially announced that this is a global pandemic. In the next several days to a week or so, we're going to continue to see things go up. We cannot be discouraged by that, because the mitigation is actually working.
The unvaccinated overcrowd our hospitals. I'm moving forward with vaccination requirements wherever I can.
Hi, it's Jonathan. Welcome to COVID Secrets and welcome to this bonus episode. One very important part of sharing the truth is exposing hidden data. It has become clear that there's so much hidden data relating to the bigger agenda that's behind this whole pandemic. In this episode, we aim to bring important information to light, sharing the truth behind these harmful effects of the vaccines and how these are being hidden. We'll start with Dr. James Neuenschwander, who graduated from the University of Michigan Medical School. He's board certified in emergency medicine, integrative and holistic medicine, and anti-aging and regenerative medicine. Dr. Nguyen Xuanda reveals how many doctors, and particularly parents, believe that the vaccines on the schedule have been thoroughly tested when this is far from true. He also talks about how the CDC and the FDA have been opaque about the real side effects of these vaccines, and especially for the COVID vaccine. This means that no one could have possibly given informed consent to getting the shot. Dr. Henry Ely, a licensed naturopathic doctor with over 20 years of clinical experience and board-certified holistic nutritionist, follows as he goes into detail about how the vaccine affects us biologically in serious ways, even though the CDC publicly denied this. He refers to independent studies that were conducted by various countries that prove the CDC has been making false and fraudulent claims, and that the COVID shot does everything it's not supposed to in terms of harming the body. Karen Kingston, it's a privilege to be with you. I've really enjoyed our conversations together. You've taught me so many fascinating things. We've been looking forward to doing this interview for a little while.
Yes, yeah.
I think the audience is going to really enjoy this. Let's start with your credentials. You worked for a very interesting company, and that mustn't have been an easy choice to come out and do what you're doing right now. So I'd love to hear about that.
Sure. Well, my background's in pharmaceuticals, medical device, and biotech. So right out of school, right out of volunteering in a hospital, I worked for Pfizer in sales, and then I transitioned over to the marketing and agency side in New York City, working for their large agency. Then I actually worked at other agencies where Pfizer was a client of mine, and also had my own agency. And I've also had clients including Medtronic, Johnson & Johnson, Allergan, and some startups. So my background has involved from sales to marketing to now I'm a biotech analyst. So I go through thousands of pages of data and patents and FDA filings. And also review the law often for my clients. So what a pharmaceutical company can and cannot say is based on two things: what they filed with the FDA and what the law is. So sometimes I'm called in to help turn around situations when a marketing team goes rogue and starts doing what they call off-label promotion that hasn't been approved, and that can result in very significant fines to the company. So, Sometimes, I'm kind of like a cleaner for some companies sometimes. So,
wow. And what you're doing right now is very interesting and unique. So you're basically revealing data in regard to the vaccines. And what was your relationship with Pfizer?
I had worked for Pfizer, like I said, well over 20 years ago, and then they were a client of mine. But you know, in full disclosure, they have not been a client of mine in over 10 years. So I just again worked for the company for some years, and then I did work at their agency side. And it doesn't really matter if you work with Pfizer or J&J or Allergan. There's processes to this, and the rules are the same across the board. What happened when the vaccines rolled out, though, they're not vaccines that we know. It was all done on emergency use authorization, so a lot of the safety studies were skipped, you know, or they were just compiled together. And when they announced that they were going to start injecting children, I decided to look into how we got into this chaotic mess. And I started looking at the FDA guidelines and then the federal regulations that were put in place to allow the FDA to release a product that's not proven to be safe and it's not proven to be effective. And then I started downloading the phase 3 data from Pfizer and Moderna and J&J, and when I went through that, I mean, it was pretty terrible data. And in early May, I found the Moderna world patent, and when I found that, and it said that this contained the mRNA that was encapsulated in a lipid nanoparticle for purposes of drug delivery and monitoring. So that told me that people were injected with a medical device and were never informed. And as I continued to read through the patent, they discussed different ways to modify genetic material, create triple helix DNA. They discussed including HeLa genetic sequence in there, which is the immortal cancer gene. It's a very aggressive cancer. Luciferase was mentioned in there, which is used to also help inject new genetic material. So There's 180 pages, I think, or 200 and some odd pages. And when I went through it, it wasn't a vaccine. It was clear to me that this was a bioweapon. And I cried for 3 days. I actually wailed out to God because it's beyond evil what was created and then unleashed on the global population. So, yeah. And so I found that, and then I also researched the studies that were done to support creating modified ribonucleic acid gene therapies. And going back, I found documents going back to 2004 with the United States, University of North Carolina, you know, working with University of Beijing or University of Peking or Wuhan Institute of Virology. And what I found was they were using bat coronaviruses since early 2000. And weaponizing them by adding things like HIV glycoprotein 120, and which they found actually made it adhere better to the A2 receptors, cause more disease, and also wipe out your innate immune system. They were injecting things like monkey HIV, mouse leukemia. I've seen things called, basically from an animal, it's similar to a raccoon pox, and it's just horrific what they did. And this concept that there's viruses that jump from animals to humans is a fairy tale. It's a complete fairy tale.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's all to do with how they're culturing these things and using the fetal cell lines and using the adenoviruses from chimpanzees, all different animals, and they're actually, that's how they're crossing it between, is that right, or?
Yeah, so Major Jason Murphy was with the U.S. Marines, and he worked in DARPA. He released some documents to Project Veritas, and he released an EcoHealth Alliance response to a request for proposal from DARPA, which DARPA had said, we need a way to mitigate or suppress the emerging infectious diseases that can jump from an animal to a soldier. And they have this ridiculous sketch in the document where they show an ape and a bat and some kind of bird, and then they show a mosquito as the vector. So the mosquito then stings the bat, and then he stings a pig, and then the military personnel eats a rib from the pig and gets infected. That's a complete made-up story. It's completely fictitious. And if you go through the document, they explain that they need to make a bat coronavirus vaccine, and the methodology for the vaccine is they said they found a quasi-species animal that carries human vaccine. So in the actual EcoHealth document, they said we were sampling bats from a cave in Wuhan, and we've found some bats that were carrying the human coronavirus, SARS-CoV-1. It's completely made up. So what they said was, so there's an opportunity then for the bat coronaviruses to merge with the human coronaviruses and then infect humans. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the bat coronavirus, merge it with other viruses, and inject it into a human coronavirus backbone. And it says we're going to make chimeric viruses. So step one is get the bats. Step two is make chimeric viruses using human DNA and merging it with bat DNA. Step three is then testing it in humanized mice to see if it binds to the receptors in your heart, lungs, and kidneys to cause inflammation. So those are the three steps, and then using artificial intelligence to figure out ways to make more sequences and mutations and variants. So it clearly was for a bioweapon. So anyone who thinks that a virus from an animal jumps to a human in nature, it doesn't happen. It's done in a lab.
Yeah.
So there's no, like, and I feel just saddened that people were lied to and betrayed, because people were injected with the genetic sequences from bats, and deadly viruses like HIV glycoprotein 120. So they were injected with these genetic sequences from a bat and told it was a vaccine. And remember, we were told this was a novel coronavirus, like a bat had never crossed into humans before, because it can't. It has to be done in a lab.
That's why they use the word novel.
Yes.
Because it was so unusual, saying, how could this happen? It's novel.
Yeah, exactly.
Like from a novel, meaning fiction.
It's completely fiction. Yeah, it's made in the lab.
That's the truth-telling hidden in plain sight, the novel coronavirus, meaning the fictitious coronavirus, the fictitious story. They're telling you it's fictitious. What, our story is a lie.
Yeah.
The novel coronavirus.
Yeah. And someone was asking Fauci the other day about, I guess, the pandemic is going to be under control. And he said, well, you know, this virus is pretty tricky. It's very sneaky. He was describing himself.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah, so...
true. They drop it. They kind of let you... They tell you, but then you don't know who is who unless you're discerning. One of the things that we've chatted about, sorry, I didn't want to cut you off there.
No, the documents are there, and if you read them and understand them, it's just really eye-opening, right? We can go on the next question. I mean, I could talk about this forever, all the different animals that they're using. So the problem, too, is that the NIAID and DARPA, you know, I mean, that they're... You know, and this organization called USAID. I mean, our government, the United States government, is putting hundreds of millions of dollars into funding chimeric viruses, which are bioweapons.
Mm. Wow. Amazing. One of the things that I found really fascinating from our conversation was you talked about something called ARIES.
Yeah, that's the artificial intelligence created by the Joint Artificial Intelligence Center of the DOD, Department of Defense. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, tell me more about that. And one of the other things we talked about was the effect of how this appears to show up in the body, whether it was the graphene or whatever it was in the technology that was having this effect. And I remember you describing it similar to like a tail that was basically breaking in its path in terms of the way it would destroy like the heart muscle or something like this.
Oh, I think I was talking about the binding for, I'm trying to recall what we were talking about. It might have been the glycoprotein 120 binding.
And it was something like...
That was in the endothelial lining, yeah. I think that's what we were talking
something
about.
Something to do, and it has this tail-like structure, or something like this, or no?
You know, that has to do with the antigen binding, and I'm just, my memory's not up to, I probably had just read some of the documents the night before, my memory's not up to speed on that, but it basically the way that the spike protein is constructed is, you know, it causes inflammation in the lining of your vasculature, right? So then it's, that inflammation, you know, can lead to blood clotting and whatnot. But it's something else I just recently researched is that the lipid nanoparticles, which I had researched early on, but I found another study direct from Moderna and the NIH. So the lipid nanoparticles go around the mRNA to deliver it in your body. They made it look, our body doesn't know the difference between these lipid nanoparticles when it's injected into the arm and low-density lipoprotein, so LDL cholesterol. So when they were saying, well, we injected it in the arm, we thought it was going to stay in the arm, that was another lie. They made it look like cholesterol. Our body loves cholesterol. Our blood loves cholesterol. It picks it up and it circulates it throughout the body. So it was very much intentional to have that happen, and then they put biomarkers on it so that it would know where it would bind to. So whether it was a woman's ovaries, you know, potentially there's biomarkers there to attack the heart. There's a number of different ways it can attack the heart. So that was pretty alarming.
Hi, it's Jonathan. Thank you so much for joining me in this bonus episode. Now, this bonus episode is just one of the 9 bonus episodes that you'll be watching and you have the opportunity to enjoy, but it's also one of the 9 episodes, the bonus episodes that you'll get in the program. So not just the 9 episodes of COVID Secrets, but these additional 9 bonus episodes and so much more, the 50 full-length interviews, the transcripts that you can read along and actually have it printed in the book and in your home on your coffee table so you can read it, put the DVD in the DVD player and enjoy that resource censorship-free so no one can take it from you. And also you'll have your own membership area where you can access the content anytime, all the additional new content as we're going to be giving you updates, and we'll be helping to guide you, help you take the next steps, have question and answer sessions with our experts so you can learn and even ask them questions directly there live on the line. It's an exciting opportunity and I'm really glad that we can offer this to you and at such a low price during this window of time at this great discount with all the free gifts. So make sure to take advantage of that if this is something you want before we close the program down. And I appreciate you taking the time to watch this episode. And all you have to do is simply click the buttons or the banner below and you'll get access to that right away. Hi, it's Jonathan Otto here and I'm with Dr. James Neuenschwander.
It's been driving me nuts with the COVID vaccines because, you know, there's a lot of, one good thing about it is that, you know, there are some very mainstream, well-credentialed people, as I like to say, they have more letters after their name than I have letters in my name. But, you know, these are well-credentialed people.
And you have a lot of letters in your name.
I got a lot of letters in my name. So, but they're well-credentialed people that, you know, are top of their field. They're published. They're leaders. They're involved with journals, all that academic stuff. And they're waking up and saying, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. What do you mean that natural immunity should not be counted when we're dealing with COVID and mandates and all that stuff. What do you mean that we need a booster when you said we needed two shots or now we need a second booster instead of a first booster? You know, they start looking at the numbers and saying, wait a minute, I remember the swine flu vaccine. We had 100, 150 cases of paralysis of Guillain-Barré and four or five people died and the CDC reviewed it. They shut down the program. That's what the CDC is supposed to do, right? And now all of a sudden, what's going
1976,
on?
1976, right? 1976, 50 deaths, 500 cases of Guillain-Barré, right?
Shut it down. They shut it down. Yep. And now, you know, we look at the numbers and it's like, oh, you know, VAERS is reporting 24,000 deaths and over a million adverse events and oh, but you can't trust VAERS. All right, but now we got some numbers from Pfizer that says, well, yeah, there were however many deaths they had. I'm sorry, I don't have the numbers at the top of my head.
1,200
deaths. Now, when you read through that document, it's 1,200 deaths out of how many vaccines? And you look at, okay, this is out of X number of vaccines administered. They actually deleted that out of the document. They blacked it out. We don't know how many vaccines they gave up to that point. But still, it doesn't matter.
There was under 44,000 people in that clinical trial.
Well, this is beyond that. This is also once the vaccine was released. So there's more than just 44,000 people.
Oh, got it. Yeah.
So, but it when you look at just vaccines in general, in an average year, you got a couple hundred deaths from all the vaccines, right? And now you got 1,200 deaths. I don't care how many vaccines you gave, you still have 1,200 deaths. That's six times what we see normally. And if you look at VAERS in general, you're talking 24,000 reports compared to 200. That's not a factor of six, right? That's a factor of what? 60, I mean 100, it's just so much more than what we're used to. And so now you have some of these mainstream people saying, what is going on here? Why isn't the CDC running around with their hair on fire trying to figure out what's happening? You know, is it fraud? Are people just falsely reporting all these things? Is it happening, but it's not related to the vaccine? What is going on exactly? And particularly when they see the CDC come out and just say, no, it's not the vaccines. Why? You evaluated all 24,000 cases. You pulled all the charts. You evaluated all the records. Give me a break. No, they're just trying to do it by caveat. And then they try to cover things up and, you know, all the ways that CDC and the FDA manipulate things, it's all out in the open and these doctors are seeing it. Well, and the other thing that, you know, as a physician, what I want to know is really what is the risk of whatever the intervention is that I'm using, you know, whether it's a medication or an operation or it's chemotherapy or it's a vaccine, you know, what is the risk of the vaccine? And this is really the only place in medicine where they just want to whitewash the side effects of it. It's like, you know, you can't handle the truth. Like you're going to tell us that there is, you know, the 1 in 500,000 rate of autoimmune encephalitis from this vaccine and everybody's going to stop vaccinating. Well, you know, that's not true. If we knew what the risk was, then we could determine, is it worth taking that risk for the benefit you're going to get? So, you know, why do we use chemotherapy? Those are god-awful toxic drugs, but so is cancer. Right? So you have something that can kill you, you're going to tolerate a lot more toxicity and a lot more side effects than something that is a relatively benign disease. again, if you don't like COVID for kids. I mean, it's just not that horrible disease. So the vaccine better have very, very few, if any, side effects. And we don't know what those side effects are. I mean, we have an idea that, you know, you can get the myocarditis from it. There's some clotting issues. But we don't know the actual numbers because they keep hiding them from us. They won't give us access to the data. They won't allow us to evaluate it. And so what do you want me to think? You know, if you're going to black out how many vaccines you administered, and we both know that's the denominator. We have 1,200 on the top. That's how many people died. What's the denominator on the bottom so we can figure out, is it 1 in 100, 1 in 10,000, 1 in a million? What's the rate? You just blacked out that number. Why did you do that? Right? We weren't able to keep up with all the reports coming in. We had to hire X number of people. They blacked that number out too. Right? Pfizer had to hire more people to deal with all the reports of adverse events that were coming in from the vaccine. And they wouldn't...
7 pages at the end of that document as the appendix to show all the different conditions that had been developed in connection to the shot. What are you saying?
Yeah, so the Pfizer actually had, what did they call, adverse events of interest or something like that. So it wasn't just, you know, I have a headache. They had certain things that were of interest. You know, the concerning thing, even with the data that we have, you know, the concerning thing is that you look at the number of adverse events that were reported, and you look at the number of people that have recovered, and it's only about half of the people have recovered. The other half still are having chronic problems with it. You know, but again, they're hiding the stuff from us. What do you want me to think? If you are blacking things out, if you are trying to hide things from me, I'm going to assume you have something to hide. You know, so what do you have to hide?
And it's blacked out for a reason, like you're saying. And so then it leads people to all these conclusions. And look, I want you to actually take me through this document, if you're willing. I've got it here on the screen. I haven't had somebody give me the lowdown on this. Just perhaps you could just like talk me through it and
okay.
just teach me what this document is and why it's important, and just lead me through like I knew nothing, which I
right. So this starts, you know, so it's post-authorization adverse events report. So this is everything since they got their authorization from the FDA. So if you scroll down, they give you some of the numbers. So, you know, they just talk about how they gathered things. So I'll go up a little bit there. So what here's what they have the overview, and they tell you what the numbers were. So this is through February 28th of 2021. All right. They had a total of 42,000 reports with 158,000 events. So again, that tells you right away, it's not just people that were in the study, because there were only 40,000 people in the study and only 20,000 of them got the vaccine. So this is 42,000 reports involving 158 or 159,000 events. And then they tell you where they're from, most of them from the United States, but they give you the other countries there. So if you scroll down to the next page, they give you the characteristics of the study, the genders. Go back up a little bit. This is what I was talking about with the events here. So when you look at the very bottom there, case outcomes, you know, recovered or recovering, 19,000. That's out of 42,000. That's less than half that are recovered or recovering. And the rest recovered with sequela, meaning they still have symptoms or they're not recovered. And then you got the 1,223 people that died. Now, that's out of 42,000 reports, but we don't know how many people actually got the vaccine at that point. So, you know, again, it tells you sort of what the disorders are. And then as you scroll through the rest of the document, they go through each one of those individual systems, a neurologic system, cardiovascular system, that sort of stuff. So this is just how they report these things out. So, you know, and again, they have most of what they're dealing with are called adverse events of special interest. And these are the things that they were looking for in terms of are they causing problems or not.
Okay, yeah, that's helpful. And then what about this? Could you explain this?
So this chart just gives you the general, it breaks them down according to the type of complaint. and then they're telling you which they consider serious and which they consider non-serious. So, you know, when you're looking at things like just the general disorders, most of them are non-serious. But when you look at infections, you look at cardiovascular problems, you look at psychiatric problems, you look at immune problems, even though the numbers are lower, they're all serious, all right? So, you know, when you have nervous system disorders, that could be a headache, right? And a headache usually is not a serious side effect, and it's a very common side effect with many different medical interventions. Same with gastrointestinal, right? But when you're getting into some of these other things, they're mostly serious side effects that you're looking at there. But again, to me, the numbers here are just the 1,200 deaths. So you look at VAERS for an entire year for all the vaccines, it's somewhere in the 200 to 300 range for all the vaccines in an entire year. And here it's 1,223 up to February 28th.
Hey, it's Jonathan Otto here, and I'm with Dr. Henry Ely. We're going to talk about some things that have just been happening in regard to some announcements that have come from the mainstream, which are now confirming the things that Dr. Ely, Dr. Zelenko, and many others have been speaking about for a long time, and what we've been sharing with you in our previous work. So it's very important that we understand what is happening at a cellular level with the DNA, with what is going on inside of our bodies, one, so we can know how to advocate for ourselves, our health, and the health of others, and realize there is no reason that is a good reason to get these shots. Not only that, but also to learn how we can reverse the damage as well for those of us and those that we love that are in that situation that need that help. So thank you, Dr. Ely, for being here.
Amen. Jonathan, thank you so much for having me. Thank you to everybody who's listening in and your endurance on this topic. I mean, this is definitely the topic of our generation. It's just massive implications across the board. You know, I think the first thing I'd like to do is share with people what we were told, because we're seeing a definitive pattern here, Jonathan, of lies, false statements, fraud, you know, and it's all at the front end to kind of encourage compliance. I'm going to make a statement here that I want to credit to Tom Renz, because I think he's solid over target with this, and that is, in every single person who elected to get the experimental shots, informed consent has not been reached once. Why? Because of the false statements, because of the lies, because of the fraudulent data. All right. Not once has informed consent been achieved for anyone who elected to participate in this ongoing, you know, human experiment. Okay. That's the first thing you have to understand. The largest human experiment in history is underway right now, and it is dangerous, and they have opened Pandora's box. So what did the CDC tell us? And what did the gene therapy manufacturers tell us as well? What did they tell us? That the mRNA sequence, once injected, would erode very quickly, would be broken down by enzymatic action very quickly, therefore they need a lipid nanoparticle around it, right, to preserve it and get it into the cell. This is the first thing they said. The concern becomes at that point, well, if it's in a lipid bubble, it's going to have an affinity for other fatty tissues, liver, reproductive organs, nervous system, especially the central nervous system. They said, no, it's going to be administered into the arm. It's intramuscular. It's going to be uptaken very quickly by the myocytes and by epithelial cells and things like that. It can't possibly get to these other very delicate tissues, liver, reproductive organs, central nervous system. And then Japan in 2021 showed that, no, it could. Because Japan is one of the only countries I know of that does their own independent analysis on all of these so-called vaccines, these gene therapy shots. They showed conclusively that the mRNA sequences have an affinity for fat tissue, which makes that very concerning. The next thing we were told by the CDC was that the mRNA sequences, once uploaded into a cell, would only co-opt the ribosomal subunits to make the spike protein in those cells. Okay, well, if that's an epithelial cell, like a skin cell, Jonathan, no problem. right? Those cells turn over so quickly, no big deal, right? The problem becomes when it uploads into a neuron. The problem is when it uploads into reproductive cells. The problem is when it uploads into liver cells. The problem is when it uploads into immune cells. This is something the University of Washington was really bragging about, saying, hey, this is going to be great as a platform because now the immune cell won't be able to phagocytize and eat the antigen. It's just going to infect the immune cell, and the immune cell will start producing spike protein. Well, that's a terrible idea because that's going to potentially pit the immune system against itself. You see, on every cell, Jonathan, every cell has what's called a cell surface identifying protein. And this little protein that's on the surface of the cell is going to do a very simple thing for the immune system. It's going to identify the cell as self, meaning immune system, I'm good, we're on the same team, you can leave me alone. Or it's going to identify the cell as not self, in which case the immune system will attack it. Well, if an mRNA sequence has infected a cell, which is that's what it does, and that cell starts producing spike protein, then that cell is going to send a signal out through its cell surface identifying protein saying, I'm no longer self. And now the immune system, when it comes in contact with that cell, an immune cell coming in contact with it,